greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm David Metzger, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. We've got another guest host in here because Neil is out at Fantastic Fest doing, apparently, fantastic things. Dave's been on the show before. It's been a while, though. It's been about a year?
It has been about a year, and I have to profess my ignorance here. I had never heard of Fantastic Fest until you told me that's where Neil was. But that sounds like a very Neil place to be.
It's a very Austin place to be, apparently. And I think it's relatively new. It's not like something that goes back to the 60s or anything like that.
Max Yasgur's farm, that kind of
thing.
Yeah,
but I think the last time you were on, we were talking Sorority Row.
Ooh.
That was the one movie I remember our discussion being about.
Fun times.
It was in the dregs of the fall. But go ahead, Dave, and tell us where you're from, what you do, how we can find you, all that good stuff.
I'm the senior editor for Bullseye.com. That's BULLZ-EYE.com. I'm their senior editor. I do double duty on music and movies, which is why Mr. Kevin and I have crossed paths many, many times before.
Not for the music, but for the movies.
No. I don't think we've ever talked about music, have we?
Except as it pertains to movies. Yeah, I'm not a big music guy, you know.
No? Well, there's a lot of it. It's hard to keep up with it all. I mean, 30,000 albums a year.
Yeah,
you're
going
to cut something out of your entertainment diet. That's a good place to start, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, but
we got a much
you,
better slot this year, slate of movies this time around than we did last time, don't we?
That's true. Well, you got more stuff to talk about. And we got actually a lot to do in the review segment. So let's just go ahead and get through the paperwork first. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and reach us. You can also catch us on iTunes by searching Fat Guys at the Movies, and Neil and my picture will pop up. You can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, and you can leave us a voicemail. We're giving out a new voicemail because we've had some issues with the other ones. I think Neil's just not paying his bill. And so this new voicemail is 740-205-6456. We do have a voicemail, but we're probably going to – it's, I think, more directed at Neil. So we'll play that probably in a later episode. Nothing against you, David, but it was actually from a guy asking Neil a question. So we do get the voicemails, Thomas. We'll just play it later.
Okay. I'm still holding in on my promise that I am going to call voicemail and pretend to be Tracy Morgan. I don't know if you remember that.
I probably would recognize it. If you're like, going, I got to go down and listen to the show.
Right. No.
Yeah, no.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. So, well, there we go. You don't need it now. You don't need a call. Anyways, let's hop into the movies now, because this is probably one of the big ones this week is the Social Network, and this one in which David Fincher directs the film about the development of Facebook and all the drama behind its creators.
I need to do something substantial in order to get the attention of the clubs.
Why?
Because they're exclusive and fun, and they lead to a better life.
People want to go on the internet and check out their friends, so why not build a website that offers that friends, pictures, profiles? I'm talking about taking the entire social experience of college and putting it online.
The site got 2,200 hits within 2 hours.
1,000. 22,000.
This idea is potentially worth millions of dollars.
Millions?
You stole our website.
They're saying we stole the Facebook.
I know what it says.
So did we?
We just recently saw a screening of this. I'll go ahead and give you first crack at this, Dave. What did you think of it?
Ah, thank you very much. Well, I'm going to say this. I think how people perceive this movie or how much they like this movie will live and die on how they feel about Aaron Sorkin, because the script is very Sorkin-esque. There is lots of chatter. I've got to think this script was probably 250 pages long. I mean, there's lots of talking.
I'd heard it was 180. Actually, I mean, an actual report that it was 180 pages.
Wow.
The script.
And it's supposed to be a page a minute, right? Is that the breakdown?
Roughly.
Yeah. Well, there is about that much talking in it. Now, having said that, I thought it was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. I thought I love Jesse Eisenberg in it. I thought he nailed the part of Zuckerberg because he was not a terribly likable guy, and yet you still kind of rooted for him, which is not a very easy trick to pull off.
I didn't, but
you didn't. Oh, you didn't like him in it?
I hated every single character. If a nuclear bomb would have gone off in Harvard University in the middle of this movie, I would have been like, eh. some good architecture got destroyed, but these guys, who cares?
Well, all right. I'll just stand back. Please continue rant.
No. What else did you think?
I like Trent Reznor's music a lot. And what's funny is that our friend Kristen Dreyer Kramer and I were joking about that quote we saw from Ain't It Cool News about holy blank how great the soundtrack was. And I thought, oh, geez, that's just a terrible pull quote. But he's right. It was I really liked the music to it. I thought it was cool.
Now, what's Trent Reznor from? He's
Chanel's. He's the
Okay. That's what it was.
Fincher's directed a couple videos for him. So their relationship is back a few years. Mm-hmm. I lost me for a second. I like the fact that they, you know, didn't just make it a one-sided story, that you got to see everyone's perspective. And to be fair, I don't think anyone got out of it clean. Nobody looked particularly good. I like what they did with the two twins. That must have been a challenge, from a blocking perspective and just, you know, technically.
It was like a double mint ad.
Yeah. Yeah, but I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was amusing. I thought it was I thought the dialogue was well written, even if it was, you know, some would argue overwritten. It didn't stop me from enjoying it one bit. I liked it a lot.
I think my favorite line of dialogue was, there was a scene where there's the chance that the network would go down, and Eisenberg's character, you know, whatever, Zuckerman, is on the phone. He's like, "But we're Facebook. We don't crash." And I'm like, I laughed. I don't know if you heard me laugh. I was like the only one who did. And I'm like, yeah, but, and I'm thinking to myself, you may not crash, but you just work like crap for, you just don't work.
It was funny. Just the other day, I couldn't get on. And I remember how much that bothered me, that I couldn't get on. And I'm like, oh, this isn't healthy.
Well, I don't know. There's a whole nother debate on the quote unquote addiction to Facebook. I did get annoyed with the chatty dialogue because it really did feel overwritten. It opens with that. It opens with this like 18 minute.
Yeah, very chatty opening scene. That's true.
And I'm watching this going, okay, I already hate the character, like with a passion. I was just waiting for somebody to kill him because he was just annoying. And part of it's Jesse Eisenberg. I've never been a big Eisenberg fan.
No.
I think kind of part of the point was he wasn't supposed to be that likable, and nobody really was. My biggest beef with the movie is that it was just. It was almost, in my opinion, pandering to its audience in terms of being the audience being high school and college kids who think the world revolves around them and they're the most important things and they're the trendsetters and they're the awesomest people in the world, where they're like, oh my God, we're going to be in 100 schools and everything like that. Whereas I'm like, well, Facebook didn't explode really until it got out of the schools. And into just the regular world, people like you and me and business people and that kind of thing.
At which point the college kids and high school kids gave up on it completely.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I thought it was probably the most narcissistic movie I've seen in a long time. It's not that I hated that part. It's just I was disinterested in that. I'm just like, oh, it's more of the people going, oh, we're the cutting edge. We know what we're doing. And they kind of like overplayed the Facebook angle. So we're gonna run to a break here real quick. When we get back off the break, we'll talk a little bit more about it and give our ratings. I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. So.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We were just discussing A Confederacy of Narcissists, or as the studio likes to call it, The Social Network. Kevin, do you still have any more punches you'd like to throw at?
I guess part of it is just the other thing that it's almost like the film itself and the filmmakers and the people who do Facebook don't get why Facebook is popular. It's sort of like, it reminds me, I once heard Stephen King talking about his books that he writes, and I'm talking like back in the 80s or 90s, and in this interview he starts talking about why he thinks his books are popular, and I'm listening to this, and I was a big Stephen King fan before he dried up, and then his stuff became boring. Well, no, once he went, you know, and was sober, his stuff's not as interesting.
The rock star cliche. They get sober and happy, they get dull.
It's so true. But I remember thinking, I mean, like, he totally misses the point as to why his books are compelling. It is exactly not what it is. And I said to my wife when I came home, I said, Facebook, people like Facebook not because of all the cool stuff it does. People like it in spite of all that cool stuff it does. People just like it so they can just kind of do that little interaction and have pictures, and that's about it. Nothing more than or less than you really could do on MySpace. It's just much cleaner.
Right.
And all this other crap that they throw on there, that's not why people like it. People, there's a whole segment in there where he's like, oh, we got to find out who's it. You got to say whether you're in a relationship or not, which, first of all, was something that was on MySpace before Facebook even really did that. So that's not a new concept. Putting photos on, not a new concept. But they were pitching it like it was this brilliant, brand new thing. And I'm like, I don't think you guys understand why it's a popular thing. So, you know, that kind of stuff. And then, like, the groupie aspect of it, I'm like, they don't like you because you started Facebook. They like you because they think you're going to be a millionaire.
So right.
I'm a cynical bastard.
Oh. Well, I mean, seeing as many movies as we do every year will bring that out of us. if you're not cynical after doing this job for a couple of years, then
God love you.
Yeah, you're on drugs or you're the type of eternal optimist that generally doesn't become a movie critic. But yeah. I guess the groupie thing didn't bother me because it was so brief.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't argue with anything that you're saying, mm-hmm. but I still enjoyed it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's getting a lot. I mean, there's a lot of people who are heaping praise on the movie, which, you know, I mean, I honestly think this is going to be one of the, it's going to be nominated for Best Picture. It's one of those that's going to get all these awards and nominations. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of There Will Be Blood. That was a movie that people went gaga over.
I didn't.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about. Everyone's like, greatest film of the year.
Yeah,
and I'm like, it's a quality film. It looked great. It you know, it had drama, but I'm just like, it didn't just make me, you know, stand up and go, that's awesome. You know what I mean?
No, it actually ended, and I was kind of looking, kind of scratching my head, like, what, really? That's the end? What on earth is, you know?
Yeah.
It just, you know, and especially that late in the game, too. I'm like, I sat through all of that, and this is how you're going to end the movie?
So, but I think, and part of it with The Social Network, for me at least, is, I knew I was going to have a problem with it from when they released the trailer, and I see people on Facebook and Twitter were like, oh my God, this is the greatest trailer ever, and I watch it, I'm like, well, it's not awful, but it's not grabbing my attention.
I like the trailer, but I didn't think it was the greatest one ever.
Yeah, so, yeah.
So.
But so, I'm still going to say it kind of rocked. What's your fat guy verdict?
Oh, I say it rocks.
Okay, cool.
So,
well, we'll move on to the next movie, which is not allowed to rock because they didn't show it to us. And that's Case 39. Renee Zellweger battles Ghost in the long-awaited sequel to Case 38.
What she needs right now is a safe, supportive environment. I think that I can provide that for her.
Do you live alone?
Just me.
Just us.
I had a bad dream.
You gotta expect some hiccups. You can't undo 10 years of trauma in 6 weeks.
I went by the house.
Mom and Dad were barricading themselves in their room at night.
What scares you?
They followed me.
Who?
We didn't see this.
No, we didn't. You know what I was thinking about, though, the other day, and I actually had to look up her IMDb profile just to see how long it had been, but it just felt to me like it wasn't that long ago that Renee Zellweger was on top of the world, and I was wrong, of course. It was back in 2002, 2003,
yeah.
And since
it was
then,
like 8 years, yeah.
She hasn't made a good movie in ages, but it was weird just to see how quick the drop-off was in quality on the projects that she was picking. It seemed like after Miss Potter, is that what it was?
Oh, yeah.
She went to hell in a handbasket, and that was 4 years ago, I think.
Miss Potter? I think Miss Potter was longer than that.
I think it was 2006. I don't think it was released until 2007, which might be why it seemed so recent.
Uh-huh.
But I'm pretty sure the date on the IMDb page was 2006. But either way, she hasn't had a good role since then. Well,
I think maybe part of it was because all the movies that she did that really got critical acclaim were Miramax movies, because you had Cold Mountain, which is Miramax.
Chicago.
You had Chicago, which is Miramax.
Right. What about Nurse Betty? Was that Miramax? I mean, that was an indie in some form, I'm sure of it.
Yeah. Bridget Jones's Diary was Miramax.
Was it?
Although the sequel was not, and the sequel did not do well. So you can blame the Weinsteins for her career dip.
Blame. No, they get the credit for her success. She gets the blame for the downfall, right?
Oh, okay.
Somebody, who's picking those scripts once the Weinsteins were gone?
I don't know. So yeah, I don't know about this one. I've seen the trailers. You know, I mean, it's not a big surprise they're not screening it, because it's hit and miss with horror films from the studios in Columbus. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to check it out this weekend, but I'm not holding my breath for anything good.
I'm afraid I'm not either. Sorry. It's been too long since she's done something that really won me over. And Renee used to be someone who could win me over pretty quickly, but now I just have zero interest in her. It's like, do you remember that big thing when she was involved with Bradley Cooper, and there was like this whole Jennifer, Renee, Bradley bizarre love triangle going on.
I don't remember.
Yeah, now all of a sudden it seems as though she's taking career advice from Jennifer Aniston, because she's just picking bad movie after bad movie.
Yeah, but yeah, don't even get me started on Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
We can agree that Case 39 gets a preemptive suck at least.
Yep, afraid so. Sorry, Renee.
All right, let's move on to the next one. This is Let Me In. Cloverfield director Matt Reeves remakes the Swedish film Let the Right One In, about a bullied 12-year-old boy who befriends a vampire girl next door.
I found out the body a few days ago. Victim completely drained of blood. Please don't see that boy again.
Where's your dad?
He pissed on my dad.
What was that? What was going on?
What are you, really?
I need blood to live.
You okay?
I know you were a huge fan of Let the Right One In.
I am. And I like this original too. I mean, it's anybody who really likes the original doesn't really need to see this unless they just want to see the movie in English rather than read it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because of subtitles. But I thought he did a good job of adapting it. There was only one thing that I noticed that he changed in it, and it was a marginal one. It actually didn't really have anything to do with the plot. It was just a stylistic change. But the rest of it is, my gosh, almost, you know, scene for scene, line for line, and shot for shot. The one thing I thought was really interesting was the fact that Owen's mother in the movie, she's literally faceless. You don't get a close-up of her face in the entire movie. Did you notice that?
I absolutely did notice that, yes. And that was that goes to one of the things. Now, it's funny because it's been a couple years since I've seen Let the Right One In, and I liked it. I did enjoy it when I saw it, but I wasn't like, it wasn't like my top 10. It wasn't in my top 10. You know, I thought it was a well-done movie, and it was an interesting take on a lot of things. But so it's been a while since I've seen it, and my goal was to rewatch it before we recorded this. I got about halfway through it, and other things I had to take care of, like go see The Social Network.
Right. I mean, it's been a busy week. I mean, this has been our busiest week in ages, actually.
Oh, yeah. And but I got enough of the taste of it. And I think it's almost alarmingly similar in tone and character, and even set design. I mean, it looks like they're shot at the same place.
Yeah.
In several moments of the film, and some shots are, you know, directly pulled from the original. Which, you know, to people who've never seen the original, it's not going to matter, because they don't come with that preconceived the pre knowledge. But that can be a slippery slope, because for people who know the original, you invite so much criticism with that, you know,
right.
And that's where it was like, almost like it was so close, but then there were some parts that they did a little differently that just weren't as good, at least in my opinion. And that's where I thought it is where it broke down. We actually have to go to a break. We'll finish talking about Let Me In on the other side of this break, and we'll be back. We'll be right back.
miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's finish talking about Let Me In, because I think there's a lot more to talk about this than we had a lot more to talk about this time than we did last time you were on the show with like Sorority Row.
Because we've seen these movies, I think it was the difference. I'm starting to think that what did we cover last time? It was like Last Chance Harvey or something that we thought was okay, but just couldn't get jazzed about. It was just we're like, yeah, it kind of rocked, and okay, let's move on. So yeah, I mean, this one we've obviously, you know, we've got stuff to say about this one.
Yeah, finish. You had something else you were going to say about.
You were talking about what a slippery slope it is when it comes to, you know, slavishly remaking a movie like this. And you're absolutely right. But the reason I'm going to give this a pass is because compared to most of the horror movies that are being made by the American studios these days, this is so far above and beyond just about everything that's coming out lately that, you know, I want people to see this movie because it's good. You know, even if it's exactly like the Swedish version, it's still a very good movie. So I'm going to let it go. I think I'm perfectly happy with the fact that he remade it because, you know, I like the fact that he didn't give in to some, you know, some nitwit studio idea to, you know, make it hipper and edgier or whatever cliche you want to throw out there. I love the fact that it was set in the early 80s. The soundtrack is great. That scene in the that little hideaway. That little hidden place. They're playing a song from the band Frur, which was basically Underworld before there was Underworld.
Yeah.
I love the fact.
That means nothing to me. But...
Okay, well, do you remember the big song in Trainspotting, Born Slippy? That's Underworld.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, big electronic band. But they went through a few incarnations before they wound up like that, and that was one of them. So I thought that was cool that they used that song. So, no, I actually like what Reeves did here. And, you know, I mean, I probably maybe wouldn't have given him the benefit of the doubt on another movie depending on what it was, but in this case it's all right by me.
Yeah, I hate to sound like one of those snobs that's like, oh, the original is so much better.
Yes. You
know, I mean, I always I hate that I'm saying that, but I can't not compare it to the original because I've seen it and it was so close. And there were just only a couple things. There were a couple, I mean, in general I liked it, and I think it's a good movie. And as far as remakes go, it's incredibly truthful to the original, and it's where he strayed from it that caused me some problems. One thing I think this wasn't necessarily a result of the Let the Right One In, but this is more. I think this is a holdover from Cloverfield. Cloverfield, by its design, was all handheld, walk crazy, lots of movement, all this crazy stuff going on. And this one, it's almost like he just took almost too much time in some shots. There's a scene where the kid comes out of into a hallway and turns and walks down it. And it takes like 15 seconds, which is an eternity on screen. And it wasn't really a suspenseful part of it. It was just, it seemed like he was letting it, it was almost like he was like, I want to let it breathe enough so I'm not, so it looks visually different than Cloverfield.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that was absolutely on his mind. That he didn't want people to think that he was just some caffeine riddled, you know, ADD sufferer who just wants everything to be fast and shaky and jittery.
And my only other real complaint about it is when the girl vamps out, they overdo the special effects.
Oh, the CGI is terrible. You're absolutely right about that. It's like they tried to make her look unhuman. Which there was no reason to do that. I mean, it's not like she's turning into a wolf or anything. I mean, just let her remain human. You're absolutely right about that. I mean, the attack scenes, the one scene climbing up the tree,
One was under the bridge. There's an under the bridge scene, and I actually got to that scene. I've gotten through that scene in watching the original again, and I'm like, okay, the remake, the Let Me In version it's more violent and it's more shocking, but it also takes you out of the film, I think, a little more than it really should. And going back to the thing with the mother, the faceless mother, that's something that I was just like, it's those times where it's like he's like, I'm gonna really go for the art house feel to something like this. I'm like, he's like, oh, I get it. He's a kid who doesn't have a relationship with his mom, so his mom sort of, he just sees her from like the neck down because she's removed from, and I get what they were doing for it. It was just, it was a little heavy handed at times.
Right.
But overall, I mean, I wish I, it's one of those, it's kind of like when you see it, when there's a movie that's based on a book, and some people will go out and read the book first before they see the movie. I prefer not to, you know, cause then you can see the movie fresh. And I think I'd be curious to see what this is like fresh for somebody who's never seen the original.
Yeah, I would too. Unfortunately, everyone I know who's seen it, has seen the original. So I haven't been able to get a fresh perspective from anybody yet, but I just hope it does well. What I'm concerned about is that it's not, you know, enough like American Horror movies that people are going to be patient enough to let it evolve or unwind. And, you know, and it's a shame because I actually thought, I was worried that they were going to get tremendous pressure to change the ending. And I absolutely love the ending to the story, even if it's heartbreaking. I love it. And they didn't do that. And I was glad they didn't. I just hope that the American audiences respond the same way that I hope they do.
Well, I don't think it's a fully mainstream movie. But if it's going to do well, this is a good time to release it. It's not a January horror movie. It's definitely a Halloween horror movie, but I don't know. I mean, this is a good lead in. We can talk about the box office next. Because I mean, what do you think it's going to win this weekend? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think Social Network will win the weekend, but I also don't know how many theaters Let Me In's opening. And then plus being Overture, I mean, their promotional efforts, they're just not going to be able to match up to a studio like Columbia, which is releasing The Social Network. So
it looks like it's in 2,000 theaters. At least that's the number that I've
really
Let Me In's in 2,000. Social Network's is in 2,700, which seems kind of low.
It does seem low. I would say if Let Me In can make $10 million, I would think that's fantastic news for them. I wouldn't expect it to make any more than that. And if it does, that would be a bonus.
I think it's on track to do $10 million because it's up against another horror movie, which I don't think Case 39 is going to make. Case 39 will be lucky to break into the top five.
Yeah,
with like $8 million or something like that. It's going to do You Again numbers.
You know, I have to admit, I was traveling on Sunday, so I didn't see the box office numbers for last week. I should go and look those up while we're having this conversation.
No, I've got them right here.
You have them? Okay.
We can talk about that. It was Wall Street won the weekend, but it only won the weekend with $19 million.
Yeah, it didn't make a tremendous amount of money from what I...
Yeah. Early returns were saying 22, and that was a little inflated, which everyone's... I hate box office pundits when they write in their thing and they're like going, oh, the bull market for Wall Street. I'm like, it's not a bull market for Wall Street.
That's just lazy writing. I mean, that's just, let's come up with some cliche that goes with the title.
The Legend of the Guardians, the Owls of Ga'Hoole did $16 million, which I was surprised at how low that was because I thought it was something that we haven't had a big kids movie out recently. I mean, like the last 2 weeks have been just lots of R-rated movies,
right,
and not kids films.
You're right, but I don't know anybody who was interested in that though. I love all the kids movies. I had absolutely no interest in that one.
It was good. You know what it is? The trailer didn't tell you anything about the movie. When I finally saw the movie, I'm like, wow, there's a lot more to it than just we're going to go to the garden. I mean, it was just the trailers were awful for it. I just don't think they did anything but say there's going to be a bunch of owls flying around. And then You Again came in at 8.4.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Good to see Easy A and the town held on. So, Let Me In's not going to break $10 million. I can't see that happening.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking it's going to do. But if it's not a mainstream movie, really. I mean, if you really look at it, it's an art house
horror movie. You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
So. We didn't give our grades.
No, we didn't give grades. I'm giving it 3.5 in my review for Bullseye. I'm going to say rocks.
Okay. Really? Only 3.5?
Yeah.
I would have expected more from, cause I know what a fan you are.
Yeah. No, I think I'm holding kind of the similarity to the original, just a little bit against it. And the CGI. So 3.5 rocks.
Okay. I'm giving it a kind of rocks right there. But again, it and that comes from the fact that I like the original, but I didn't love the original.
Right.
Because that one in the Kafka Awards that we're part of, that the Central Ohio Film Critics Association, didn't that win something? That won one of
the... It went foreign movie, or...
It won something in our awards. Because of all the... As you can tell, we do tremendous show prep here.
I think it won foreign movie.
I remember getting some love from us. As it should have. It was like I said, it was a good film. And
It's funny. Especially when you get to the ending and then you see, you know, what has really been going on this whole time and what, you know, looks on the surface to be this cute boy meets girl story is suddenly much, much darker and much more sinister. And But we'll see if the low body count is held against it. You know, people say only a handful of people were killed. Lame. You know, I mean,
I don't know. I don't know if that's what I just don't think it's a it's just not that's too simplification of a factor. I just think it's not what mainstream audiences are going to go for. And that's not a bad thing. That's what it is. It's sort of like when Scott Pilgrim came out and all the fanboys were like, what? This is a great movie. Why aren't people seeing it? I'm like, it's not a mainstream movie.
It's really not.
It never was.
People were asking me what I was into when that movie came out. And I'm like, well, I'll tell you what, my favorite movie right now for the year is this one flick. And then I thought, how many people would I recommend this to? One. My best friend, Tim, I told him, you will absolutely love this movie. And everyone else, I'm like, I don't think you would like this very much. Though for what it's worth, to the fan and the fanboys out there, my wife liked it as much as I did. So girls do like movies like Scott Pilgrim, but it's got to be a special kind of girl to like it.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and guy for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing that, I don't know, I've always kind of rejected the notion that because it's mainstream, it's bad. I mean... You know, there's nothing wrong. I mean, tastes are tastes, you know, and there are good mainstream movies and there are bad mainstream movies. But this one just does this. I just don't see Let Me In connecting with a wide audience.
No, it probably won't. I mean, if we're lucky, you know, it'll open the eyes of some people to go and seek out some off the radar movies, maybe some of the J horror stuff or just foreign films of any kind. But you're right. I mean, this isn't going to be some crossover smash.
Yeah. But I mean, you can take a movie like Martyrs, which is a fantastic movie and it's a brilliantly made movie. And they're actually remaking it, which will lead us into our Fat Guy 5. They're remaking it in I don't know how the hell they're going to remake this movie because it's so brutal and just out there. But I wouldn't recommend Martyrs to a lot of people, and that's okay. You know, you know, let's get over our acceptance issues.
Yeah.
Kind of what I'm saying.
I know. Well, I think my bottom line is that I've failed so miserably at trying to anticipate what the market and the audience is going to do that I don't even try anymore. Yeah. I have no idea.
Well, and it's like for me, I would have never guessed like Benjamin Button, you know, another David Fincher movie. I would have never in a million years guessed that would have been as big of a commercial success as it was, because I'm like, that's not a mainstream movie.
No, it's not.
It's not anywhere near a mainstream
movie. No, it's an odd little movie.
Yeah. Well, it's an odd big movie.
Big movie. Yeah. And the scope of it, I'm sure, is what brought people in.
Yeah.
You know, in the love story.
Yeah. So, all right, let's move on to the Fat Guy 5. These are in honor of Let Me In. These are five great remakes of horror film, foreign films, not horror films, foreign films. And these are, of course, films that were, now we may not have seen all the originals. I've seen some of these on the list, but, I'm going to let you do the first one on this list.
You've seen all of them, haven't you?
Well, I've seen the movies. I just not,
oh, you're talking about the originals. Oh, okay. Yes. Are we going top to bottom or bottom to top?
Top to bottom. Top. These are in no particular order because we don't do anything with any sort of order in the show.
Got it. Well, while we're discussing European remakes, our first one is Insomnia, Christopher Nolan's adaptation of, it was Norwegian, right? The story of the...
Yes.
A cop who goes up to Alaska and stumbles upon a murderous author, played by Robin Williams. I haven't seen the original. I think Stellan Skarsgård was the lead in the original, right?
He is, yes. He plays the Al Pacino character.
I quite liked. I liked that Pacino and Robin Williams both played it low-key. I'm sure Nolan made sure that happened. Isn't that funny? There are three Oscar winners in that movie because Hilary Swank is the cop and a helping
right.
out. I really enjoyed
and
that.
And then there's Nikki Catt.
Nikki Catt. I forgot all about
that. Who, I don't. I think he has a friend named Oscar somewhere, and that's about the closest he'll ever get.
He's here all week, so, people.
Yeah, there we are.
All right, Kevin, you want to do the next one?
No, I would just say with Insomnia, I actually recently rewatched because it came out on Blu-ray, so I watched it. And then I rented the original. I actually have to say I kind of like the original better because it wasn't as big and ambitious. It was a little more intimate because Noel. I mean, and I like the whole how just deep the look of the film had. But I kind of like the intimate nature of the original a little bit better.
Okay.
And I'm not a big Pacino fan, so.
Yeah. I don't remember Nolan's version looking huge, but I've only seen it once, and that was after it came out.
Yeah, it's not Dark Knight, but it's it's much bigger. The rooms are bigger, it's more intense. I mean, it's like Inception. I mean, it's got scope even for its limited size. But yeah, the next one on the list is 12 Monkeys, which is based on a short French film called Le Gite, is I think how you say it. I do not know French.
Close enough for jazz is what I would say.
Yes. Have you ever seen this, the original French film?
No, as a matter of fact, it wasn't, I hate to admit this. I probably knew this at one point and then forgot, but I didn't even occur to me that 12 Monkeys would be eligible for this list.
Yeah.
It's together because I guess I had just forgotten. It's been so long since I've seen the movie.
Yeah, but well, like whereas Insomnia and even Let Me In are very similar and have a lot of parallels. This is about as far as you can get from the original. It was just inspired by, and it's a short little. It's like told with pictures. I mean, it's told with still footage and bits and pieces and that sort of thing, and it is. An awful little French film. You can go to YouTube. If you look it up, you say 12 Monkeys and you put the, however you spell it, Le Gite or whatever. If you put that into YouTube, you can find it. And it's like 12 minutes. It's not that long. But yeah, and it's just that they went so far beyond it from it's just the initial inspiration. But it is a neat little pseudo remake of it. So the next one you can do, if you want to do the network's next one.
You know what? No, go ahead. I'm going to do the next one after that.
All right. I'll do this one is The Departed, which I loved this movie. It was a fantastic. It won the Oscar. All that good stuff. Great cop.
Oh, that was the greatest Oscar moment ever when they go to announce Best Director and Spielberg, Coppola, and Lucas are out there to give away the Oscar. And I'm like laughing my head off. Jeez, I wonder who's going to win. It's like Marty had to be cracking up when he saw those three.
It would have been funny if it was somebody else. They're like, oh, damn.
Right. Right.
Oh. But it's based on it's a film called Infernal Affairs, which is Hong Kong, I believe.
I was just trying to look that up, but yeah, I kept getting it mixed up with Internal Affairs, which is a completely different movie.
Yeah, with Richard Gere.
No. That's actually it's a Chinese movie too, right? Isn't it like a Chow Yun Fat movie? Didn't he do one called Internal Affairs or something?
Oh, he may have. Yeah, but yeah, this one's Infernal Affairs, and it is Asian. It's a cop movie. So you can do the next one.
The next one is Reservoir Dogs, based on another. Asian fight movie. This was City on Fire, right? Is that what the original was? Quentin Tarantino's 1992 breakthrough about a gang of thugs who, after a botched robbery, kind of come to. Gosh, why am I going blank on this?
Safe house.
Yeah, they go to the safe house and suddenly, you know, start to realize that one of them is a cop and they don't want to.
Yeah.
No one wants to believe which one is the cop.
Have you seen the original of that? I haven't.
No, I have not.
I'd be curious because so much praise was thrown on to Tarantino, and I'd be curious how much of that story wise is his, and how much is a remake. Because like sometimes a remake is vastly different, and sometimes it's very very close to it, which is a feat of the director, no matter how they do it.
My money would be that the diner scene you know, and the selling the story to, you know, the rehearsing the story about the commode scene were Tarantino's probably biggest contributions to the overall story. I bet you, you know, there was a sadistic Mr. White in the original. I bet you the rest of the story was probably pretty similar, but
yeah,
to go and check that out.
Good. Well, the last one I have on the list is Quarantine, which came out last year?
Two years ago.
And it is, of course, super rabies has infected an apartment complex, and it's all told by the point of view of a news camera based on the Spanish film Rec, which I haven't seen, and they've come out with Rec 2, and I really need to see it, although I've heard that it's almost a shot-for-shot remake. It's just in English. And I always get irritated when people are like, why don't you just go watch the original? I'll be like, because I don't like reading subtitles.
Exactly. So yeah. I don't want to read. I just want to absorb. Yeah.
Big surprise. People in Spain don't like to read subtitles either. They like to have their movies dubbed. You know, it's always irritated me when people will be like, oh, well, go back to the, I like watching in the original. I'm like, yeah, but guess what? The other countries, if it's in Germany, it's going to be dubbed in German, you know?
Right.
So, Quarantine, definitely worth checking out. A lot of these are more darker and weirder movies, if you notice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously with all the J horror movies that were adapted, a couple of the things. Should we list a couple of the other things we were considering for the Fat Guy 5?
Yeah, you can throw in a couple in there.
The Ring was one that this movie's got some serious detractors, but I really enjoyed it. I liked Naomi Watts in it a lot, and I thought the ending was killer. I think the girl is still one of the freakiest horror characters of the last 10 years, I think.
Yeah.
So I quite like the adaptation of that. I thought they did a really good job.
That one started the J-horror rave, remake rave, and of course The Grudge is one of them that I liked as a remake. Have not seen the original, just because it's been established I don't like reading subtitles.
Yeah, I saw one. Gosh, I did see one Japanese horror movie, and how sad is this? I can't even think of what it's called. It was something along the lines of Pulse, but it wasn't Pulse. It was like this spirit that was, I don't know, following some little girl. Somebody with like a big pair of scissors that was cutting Achilles tendons. I don't know. It was strange and not terribly scary.
Okay. And was there anything else you wanted to add on that, or just those?
Oh, True Lies.
Yes.
Yeah, True Lies.
Well, which is getting made into a TV show now.
Really? You know what? Yes. I heard that. I can actually see someone trying to do that. You know, I suppose the key is going to be whether they, you know, start the TV show at the beginning of the movie or the end of the movie.
Yeah. Or they just use it as a backdrop. I mean, they've done that before.
I mean, how long can you, continue that ruse of, you know, going off to fight crime and keeping your family in the dark? You know, after a while, that would be tough. You got to get them involved in the front end, I would think, pretty quickly. I don't think I'll be setting a season pass for that, as much as I love James Cameron.
Yeah. Okay. So. Well, we probably should get going to break because we're a little over on the segment. So when we get back, we will come back and we'll wrap you up and do some DVDs.
And we're back, and it is time for the world famous DVD roundup.
Hey, I always have to set up guest hosts for that awesome ILM Skywalker sound effect.
We need to get like some reverb or something on that, so it's got a bit of an echo, some fatness to it. So it's like,
well, you know, it's funny. It's even 2 years ago when the Indiana Jones movie came out. I didn't use a rear whip sound. I'm so lazy. It's sad. But yeah, let's jump into the DVDs. What are some of your picks?
Well, I just finished watching the bonus features for Get 'Em to the Greek today, and that set is absolutely loaded. I mean, it's like two movies in one with all of the bonus features on there.
Yeah.
And you know, they're actually good ones too. I mean, like the Linorama bit where they're just riffing on lines, I thought was funny.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the bonus features in that. There's another South Park character box set that came out this week called Little Box of Butters. Is that what it was?
I think that's what it was called. Yeah.
Butters is one of my favorite characters like ever in TV history. So I love the fact that of all of the characters they decided to do after a Cartman box, they did Butters next. The only other way they could have topped that is if they had done Randy Marsh. Randy Marsh is one of the other great
Randy Marsh TV characters. Back to Get Him to the Greek. When you said two movies in one, actually one of the silliest bonus features on the Blu-ray is you have an access code to download another movie that you can stream onto through Blu-ray Live, which is an awful feature, or on your phone.
My player's not even hooked up to the internet, so I couldn't take advantage of that. Not that I think I even would if I could have.
It's like, let's clog up your system so you can download a trailer that we could have easily burned onto the disc for you.
Right.
That's all it does. But like the choices, you can either watch Dazed and Confused, Life, or something else. It's like three. Well, Dazed and I don't like Dazed and Confused, but I know a lot of people do. But the other two are just totally crappy movies that you don't even want for free, which was ridiculous.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that was. I have to admit, I was amused by that. I'm just like, okay, moving on. Went to the other stuff. The other DVD that I had that I wanted to mention is actually not a movie disc, but a music disc. There's a series of this company called Eagle Vision puts out these things where it's called the Classic Album Series. Well, they'll get the artist and talk about it, just a classic record, and they'll get them to come into the studio, break down the tracks. You can listen to individual bits. Mm-hmm. They'll talk about the making of it, and it's a really good series. And the people they've gotten involved, it's just been incredible. And this time they did a twofer with Rush. They did 2112 and Moving Pictures put together their two biggest records. And so all three members of the band and their longtime producer at the time, whom they haven't worked with since 1982, all got together to talk about this album. And for Rush fans, this stuff is just manna from heaven. It's good stuff. Because they're very candid, they're very revealing, and they're just very open and honest about what the band was going through when they made 2112. It was a make or break record, and you know, they're getting pressure to deliver a hit, and the band said, No. We're just gonna make the record we want to make. And as it turned out, that was the thing that they should have done. Yeah. So good stuff.
Well, good.
How about you?
For me, Iron Man 2, you can't say no to that one. I actually enjoyed that movie more than I think most other people did. I wasn't a huge fan of the first one, so Iron Man 2 coming out on Blu-ray is definitely...
Ooh, contrarian. Mm-hmm. You weren't crazy about the first one, but you liked this one.
I kind of liked them both the same, so I didn't see there was a huge drop-off in quality. Scrubs Season 9 is out, which is not the best season of Scrubs by far.
Is that show really on for 9 years?
Yeah, it was bounced around. It was supposed to end at season 7, and then they did an eighth one and then a ninth one where they changed it and they're interns, and it doesn't quite work, which is what led to the end of the show and moving everybody to Cougar Town. But they also have the full series of Scrubs. There's The Legend of the Seeker, season 2, which is also its final season, which is a neat little fantasy show that plays in syndication, or played in syndication, and it was produced by Sam Raimi, about a sort of like your very typical hero's journey of legend, a pre-told legend. Babies, which was interesting, not great.
Oh, you're so kind. I literally fell asleep for a couple moments during that movie.
I thought it looks great on Blu-ray, but the only thing is that the San Francisco couple, I just want to come in and punch them in the face.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot. Yeah.
There's a scene where the baby hits her in the face and she literally pulls a book out of the bookshelf that says no hitting. And I'm like, I want to hit you now.
I love when the little girl just got up and walked out of the room.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because it was there's our Earth Mother is going to take care of us. I'm like, you're singing this to children? Then The Cleveland Show, season 1. Cleveland Show season 1, which is funnier than I expected it to be, once it kind of finds its footing.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm kind of hit and miss when it comes to Family Guy I and all of its subsidiaries. Yeah. I can appreciate certain bits about it, but I have to admit, I've never seen The Cleveland Show. So
it's not bad. Like I said, it kind of has to find its footing. And of course, The Stinker is a Rhoda Volume 1.
Rhoda.
I can't believe this movie won 2 Emmys. This show won 2 Emmys. Anyways, the review wrap up, because we got to get out of here. Let me in. You said it rocked, or
yep,
kind of.
I did. No, I said rocks.
Rocked. I said it kind of rocked. Social Network, same thing. You said it rocked. I said kind of rocked.
Yep.
Case 39 got preemptive sucks all
preemptive
around.
Preemptive suck. Yep.
Next week we'll be talking about Life as We Know It, My Soul to Take in 3D, and Secretariat. And with that, we're going to go. Thanks to David Metzger from Bullseye.com.
Thanks for having me, Kevin. Yeah. Always a pleasure.
It was good to have you back after a year. And we've also, you can reach him, like I said, Bullseye.com, BULLZ-EYE.com.
Uh-huh, that's right.
All right, well, you can catch us soon. Just go to fatguysatthemovies.com. That has all our information. But we're going to sign off and bid you farewell. Thanks again, Dave.
All right, thank you. Later.